911. What are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was? Was it a person or an animal or?
I can't tell. All I know is that my central light came on and I just happened to glimpse and see this thing running across the yard. A good sized man or something. It looks like a man. I don't know what it was. Just that it ran across the yard.
Okay.
It was standing up. I'm out here looking through the window now and I don't see anything. I don't want to go outside. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sir?
See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6 foot nine, I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh. Okay, hang on.
He's right...
Is he in your yard, sir?
Yeah, God, he's big.
Okay, what's he doing in your yard?
He's looking at me.
And the guy is on foot.
I don't know what it's a big, real big person. That's all I can say.
Okay, but it is a person.
Yeah, I'd say it was a person, somebody really big.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of BanalofAmerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 8. And we are coming at you live tonight for what is sure to be a, I guess you could call it a Bigfoot bonanza. It's going to be a real in-depth discussion on Bigfoot. We haven't talked about Bigfoot, really focused on my nemesis, the Bigfoot, in such a long time, but... I go a long ways back with this creature, and I've always been fascinated by it. Even before I got into UFOs and stuff like that, I've had a really keen interest in Bigfoot. And I've been trying to get this episode together for quite some time, but we couldn't get our paths to cross. But finally, we have here tonight on the program. I'm talking about our guest, Eric Altman. He is the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. He's also one of the hosts of Beyond the Edge Radio. Spent just... well over a decade looking at the Bigfoot phenomenon. So, and he's really one of the big movers and shakers, I guess you could say, in the research field right now. One of the honest dealers. That's why I like him. He plays from an honest deck, and I appreciate that. And he's going to give us straight answers on the Bigfoot phenomenon, which I am excited about. So welcome to the program, Eric. I really am thrilled about this and cannot wait to dig into the Bigfoot mystery with you, buddy.
Well, thank you, Tim. It's a real honor to be on your program. I'm a big fan of the show.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks a lot. Well, when we usually start out on our first-time guest, we do the bio, the background, you know, lead us into the whole thing. You know, who is Eric Altman? How did you get interested in all this, and how did you gravitate towards the Bigfoot?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, and I have been for about 15 years now. I got interested in the whole Bigfoot phenomenon as a kid, around the age of 10, and I had a fascination. And you probably remember this growing up, you know, all the old black and white sci-fi movies that were shown on TV and the really bad B ones, of course.
Oh, yeah.
The giant spider who ate Cincinnati and you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon and stuff like that. And I was a fan of those types of movies, and a certain movie came on that really inspired a lot of Bigfoot researchers, Legend of Boggy Creek. And that was the catalyst that really got me interested in looking further into the phenomenon. I was kind of surprised, really, to find out that there may be a relic hominin running around the Deep South. So I wanted to find out for myself if there was something to it or not.
Nice, nice. Yeah, it's weird. I can't pull the name out of my cloudy mind right now, but we have the guy on who wrote the book about the Legend of Boggy Creek last year. Maybe you'll recall it. But,
Lyle Blackburn.
There you go. Yes, Lyle Blackburn. He just came out with another book, too, that people are really enjoying, too. But, yeah, it's funny because I think there's been a couple of guests I've had on the program who were inspired by that movie. It's really pretty crazy that it launched so many careers in a way.
Yeah, it really seems to be one of the main inspiration for a lot of Bigfoot researchers. I mean, people that... have been in this as long as I have, like Craig Woolheater, for example, the Texas Bigfoot Research Center. It got him motivated and involved in it. And there's a lot of folks that just really, that movie just kind of sparked something inside of them to look further into the phenomenon and see if there's anything to it. It's it's still a pretty successful movie to this day.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised they haven't. they will eventually. They'll reimagine it somehow and and ruin all of our childhoods. That's I guess let's sort of just jump right in because there's so much to talk about here. And like I said, we haven't done a big no pun intended. We haven't done a big Bigfoot episode in a while. So there's lots of stuff. As I said before we got on the show, I was just writing stuff down that I want to talk about. And I've been, as I said, we wanted to put this show together a while ago, and I noticed in the last few shows I've done, Bigfoot's cropped up over and over again. So finally this weekend, I'm like, I got to get Eric on the phone here and talk about Bigfoot and devote the time to it. What is going on right now, I guess, in the field of Bigfoot research? Give me sort of an overall state of it. Things are kind of hairy. Again, no pun intended. I'm going to be punning all over the place here tonight, but no pun intended. It's hairy right now with this. With this Rick Dyer thing and the Dead Bigfoot tour, we can get into that in a moment. But I guess just generally, what's the state of things? Because it seems incredibly hot right now. Bigfoot seems so hot. It's like where ghosts were 5 years ago. It's kind of scary how big this is getting.
Oh, yeah. It really has grown in leaps and bounds. It almost reminds me of the Bigfoot craze in the 1970s when In Search of came out and Monsters and Mysteries. I mean, just so many different movies came out in the 70s. That's what it kind of reminds me of. The Bigfoot phenomena is basically sweeping the country. And it's due in large part to shows like Monster Quest, Finding Bigfoot, shows like that that have come on, like the Discovery Channel, Travel Channel. Every time you turn around, there's a documentary or a new movie coming out about Bigfoot. And as you mentioned, I was supposed to be on in November. I even had a movie come out I was a part of based on Bigfoot sightings here in Pennsylvania. So it has become a worldwide phenomenon, and mainly Finding Bigfoot's been the real catalyst to bring the Bigfoot craze back around again, because that show has millions of viewers, and people love the show, and the kids love Bobo, and you know, it's really swept the imagination of the general public.
It's pretty weird in a way. Because it's kind of like when you're a fan of a garage band or something. Because I wasn't around for the original Bigfoot boom, as you're saying, from the 70s. So it's weird for me, like, just to see people talking about Bigfoot, you know? I remember when I got really back into all this, like, 10, 12 years ago, you never saw anybody even mention Bigfoot on TV or anything. So, and if it was like a one-off joke or something, rarely. Your ears perked up. You're like, what, did they just mention Bigfoot? Now it's like you can't turn around without running into a Bigfoot thing on TV. It's really surreal is probably the best way to put it.
It is, and it's weird for guys like me and some of my colleagues that have been doing this for 15, 20 years. You know, we were kind of in the closet Bigfooters. I mean, we were out there doing the research, and our names were out there in the public. But people were kind of ridiculing us for, you know, looking at us like we're crazy. You're looking into Bigfoot? That's nuts. And now everybody's coming out of the proverbial Bigfoot closet and wants to be a Bigfoot researcher. You can't, trip over a Bigfoot researcher, you know, if you go out in the woods. It's kind of ridiculous as to how popular it's become. And unfortunately, it's got a bad side to it now because everybody's a so-called Bigfoot expert. And it's crazy. You're right. It is very surreal.
Yeah. That's the weird part. Like I said, it's like being a fan of a garage band or something like that. Or I was a big wrestling fan, so when it all took off, like in the late 90s, it was kind of like that. Where it was like, well, I was watching back when it was terrible, and all you frat guys are now you're just watching, having parties. So we teased this thing. I talked a little bit about this. I actually did more looking into it in the interim since we began setting all this up because I wanted to know more. So I was informed. But what is going on? Because it's all over the news. What is going on with this Rick Dyer Dead Bigfoot tour? I guess bring people up to speed on that so we can kind of, you know, have it on the record so folks can understand this down the line. You know, 5-10 years from now when they listen to the show again, they're hopefully it'll be a footnote in history. So, but right now it's big news. So tell folks all about this Rick Dyer thing because it's pretty wild.
Yeah, the Rick Dyer story goes back to 2008. He was one of the perpetrators of what is known as the Bigfoot in the Freezer hoax. He and his partner, Matt Whitten, was a police officer who was on medical leave. He had gotten shot in the hand, and he was on medical leave. And the two of them came up with the idea to play a prank on Bigfoot researchers. So they thought we were foolish and a bunch of morons, so they wanted to play a prank on us. And they started releasing YouTube videos at that time and just calling themselves Bigfoot, best Bigfoot trackers in the world. And they had a body, and they started making these announcements that they were going to release it to the world, which really drew everybody's attention because just the mention of a Bigfoot body after all these years just really perplexed a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, of course, they got Thomas Biscardi involved, and it kind of blew out of proportion. They had a big press conference out in Palo Alto, California, in August of 2008. A few days later, it was discovered that it was nothing more than a suit stuffed with pig entrails and different animal parts and frozen in a makeshift freezer. And everybody knew who Rick Dyer and Matt Whitten were. He became a household name because of the hoax.
Right.
And since that time, he's actually tried to perpetrate four additional hoaxes on the Bigfoot researchers and the Bigfoot community, as well as the general public. He's claimed since 2008 to have two separate occasions have a body that he shot. And, of course, it was taken away by the Men in Black and confiscated by the government. And his stories became more and more incredible. Fast forward up to 2012, he was in the process of filming a movie with a company called Minnow Films out of England, out of the UK. And they were filming Rick Dyer, Thomas Biscardi, and two Ohio researchers for this film. And he claims while on location in San Antonio, Texas, that he videotaped a Bigfoot outside of his tent that was eating some food that he had nailed to a tree. And he goes on later to tell that it was ribs that he bought from a Walmart that he put on the tree. And the video was pretty impressive for those who first saw it. Nobody knew who did it. The man who put the video out there, of course, it was Rick, wasn't claiming the video. It was just released to YouTube, and a lot of people were paying attention to it. Then it was found out it was Rick, and when he started getting the attention he did back in 2008, his story began. He claimed he had shot a Bigfoot and killed it, and Minnow Films and their crew were involved with the whole incident, and the body was taken by investors to a secret storage facility somewhere in an undisclosed location. And he kept taunting people in the research community with more and more fabricated stories that it was going to be released, and we have proof, undeniable proof, and you skeptics, you know, all you doubters and haters, as he calls them, this is going to be revealed. Well, fast forward to 2014, just, you know, the beginning of this year, he came out with pictures of a prop. I call it a prop because that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But he came out with these pictures and said, well, here's the dead Bigfoot. I shot it. I killed it. And he was supposedly going to release the body, more photos of the body and video, and do a press conference on February the 9th with one of the universities in Washington State, where he claimed the body was studied and analyzed and an autopsy was done on it. But, of course, with knowing Rick and knowing his tales, he canceled the press release, or the press conference, I should say, and he began to tour this body around the country.
Yeah.
Was supposed to start in Arizona, and no venues would have him.
Yeah, I see that. That's right.
Yeah, they've turned him down and turned him away. A UFO conference down there in Flagstaff, I believe, turned him away as well. And now he's supposedly in Albuquerque, New Mexico, trying to charge people $20 per person to come in and see this prop that he has on the side of the road. So that's the very brief summary of the whole Rick Dyer story.
I looked into it. I was happy to see that apparently he can't get, you know, he went to Phoenix and no one even wanted him in the area. You know. So that's the good part of it. You know, it's like, all right, good. It seems like the general public realizes this guy is full of malarkey. But then the unfortunate part, and I mean, I guess I understand it from a media perspective, but the unfortunate part is like this, it's still all over the news.
Right.
You know, like Daily Mail picked this thing up. I guess if you take a fantastic photo, even if it's terrible looking to everybody else of a fake Bigfoot, it's enough to get page hits. And so places like Daily Mail and New York Daily News picked it up. It's pretty ridiculous in a way. It's frustrating because I think that it gives the wrong impression that the people in the Bigfoot community buy this stuff. you know. So then it makes it's terrible.
It is, and the media is giving him a lot of attention, as you said. I mean, it's been on every major media outlet there is. The majority, I'd say 95 to 97% of the Bigfoot research community don't buy it. There's a lot of doubt. I mean, his story has changed so much in the past 2.5 years. Every time you turn around, he makes something up. Now there's 3 Bigfoot bodies that he has. Not one, but 3. And he shot 3 of them, and it just gets more and more incredulous. When somebody calls him out on something and says, well, you said this, and this isn't true because we have this proof, he changes his story to something else to try to cover his tracks. He's notorious for that. And his whole tour right now is about making money. He wants to take this body around and try to make as much money as he can, because his whole thing with the media was, I have definitive proof. I have the body. I have test results. I have CAT scans. I have 3D imaging scans. I have DNA. We're going to have a huge press conference on this date. And then all of a sudden that date comes, and guess what? No press conference.
Yeah.
And he has a habit of doing that. So there's a lot of doubters, a lot of skeptics. A lot of people just don't buy it. I personally don't think he has a body. I've seen it, and it's a really poorly put together prop.
Yeah, there's just no way. There's just no way. It stretches, you know, credibility or credulity to the very limit. If he had a Bigfoot body, even if he – I don't want to offend people, but even if he's a rube, you know, you'd think that he would be smart enough to – prove it, and just prove it, dude. Just prove it. Don't bring it around. Just prove it. You'll get plenty of money just by proving it. You don't need to bring it to shopping malls. It doesn't make any sense unless he's faking it.
Well, that's the whole thing, is if he really wanted to validate himself for the hoax of 2008, like he's claiming to all these media outlets, then you do it the right way.
Right.
You take the body to renowned authorities such as Dr. Jeff Meldrum, or Esteban Sarmiento, or Natalia Reagan, or Dr. Todd Disattel, the folks that are on the fringe edge of Bigfoot research, the scientists, and let them take a look at it, and they can validate your story. However, he's chosen not to do that. Everything has been very secretive with him. He won't disclose any names, any locations, any facts, any proof, really, except for this supposed body. And unfortunately, he has it in a glass case where nobody can touch it, nobody can take samples from it, and he's keeping the general public, he's only allowing the general public to come in and see this thing. He will not let any viable scientist or reputable researcher come in and look at this thing. It's all, you know, kept locked up and under glass, so to speak.
Yeah, it's like that Minnesota Iceman all over again. But
exactly.
It's how times have not changed in a way.
Right.
And the weird part about the guy, well, I guess it's not so much him, too, because when I was looking into this, I fell into one of those Wikipedia-type holes where you click one link, and next thing you know, you're 8 clicks away from what you originally looked at. And I found an original article from the 2008 Bigfoot hoax. And the one thing that kind of stood out to me, and this is what his buddy said, the Witten guy, but it kind of applies to him, too. But the Witten guy says, everyone who has talked down to us is going to eat their words. And mm-hmm. there's this underlying current of anger from this guy. It completely unjustified anger. Whereas, if you shot the Bigfoot and captured the Bigfoot or killed the Bigfoot or proved the Bigfoot, then I would understand being angry that people don't respect you or whatever. But it's like, you haven't even done anything. What are you so angry about?
Right. Well, the best part of all of this, that if you do some digging on him and go back, and there are websites specifically dedicated to proving this hoax. I mean, they've documented and recorded every statement he's made, every YouTube video, every radio interview, and you can go back and listen to him contradict himself time and time again. But there are interviews that he's done where he's come right out and said, there is no such thing as Bigfoot. I don't believe in Bigfoot. And if I get the chance, I'm going to perpetrate another hoax again on the Bigfoot community that's going to be the grandest hoax of all time, even bigger than 2008. And it's in his own words. I mean, he's openly admitted he's one of the best hoaxers of all time. So when you have a guy that's openly admitting this, saying, you know, I'm going to hoax again, right off the bat, your red flags go immediately up. And for him just to continually say, I've got a body, I've got a body, I'm going to prove it, I want to validate myself, well, right there is an outright lie when, a couple radio interviews before, he's saying, I'm the greatest hoaxer of all time, and I'm going to perpetrate another big hoax.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, it doesn't make any sense why he's so angry. I don't. I just think, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Maybe I didn't like ballet or whatever, or ice skating because the Olympics are on. I'm trying to think of something like, but I'm not actively trying to disrupt the community. It's like, geez, dude, if you don't believe in Bigfoot and you hate people that believe in Bigfoot, become a skeptic.
Right.
Don't perpetrate these hoaxes. But we probably spent enough. I guess the only other question really about this guy is how much longer you think he's going to be in the headlines? Do you think this is going to fizzle out? Like, I imagine if they're already ditching him in Phoenix, that this thing can't pick up much more steam. I feel like it's on the downslope, hopefully.
We're hoping it is. And fortunately, there's a lot of folks who know this is a hoax. I mean, they've followed it from the start. And they're reaching out to these venues and forewarning people in advance, hey, he's coming to your area. This is what he's done. Here's the proof of what he's done. Do you want to associate yourself with a known criminal and a known fraud, scam artist, a fraud, a hoaxer? And usually those businesses see that, and they're like, uh-uh, we don't want that kind of reputation. So they cancel the event. And I'm hoping there's some people that are working behind the scenes to try to get the nail in the coffin, so to speak, the final proof to prove that it is a prop. And from what I understand, my sources that I've talked to say they're very, very close to getting that proof that it is a prop. So hopefully this is the last hurrah of Rick Dyer, but I have a feeling we'll be hearing from him again.
Now, what's the story with this other dead Bigfoot, the shooting Bigfoot film, this Justin Smeha? I guess he's affiliated now with the Bigfoot Bounty Show. Let's tie all that in together, I guess. First of all, what the hell is this Bigfoot Bounty Show? I don't know much about it. I immediately sort of dismissed it because it sounded too over the top for me.
Right.
And if it's a reality show, unless it's a live weekly show, I presume no one got the Bigfoot, because if someone, let's say they filmed it in September and someone got the Bigfoot, they wouldn't wait until February to be like, hey, we got the Bigfoot. They'd say, we got the Bigfoot, tune in, because the show's going to start, you'll see how we did it. So
right.
I presume we're not going to get the Bigfoot, but I'm running in circles on my own here. What is the story with this Bigfoot Bounty Show, and then tie that into this Smeha guy who claims he shot a Bigfoot? I heard his story. I'm sorry, I don't believe that one either, for a number of reasons.
You're not alone there.
Okay.
The Bigfoot Bounty Show is kind of like a cross between Survivor meets The Great Race meets The Bachelor. I mean, it seems like it's all these different reality TV shows that are rolled up into one with a Bigfoot spin on it. They had 9 teams. Some of them were hunters and trappers and wildlife photographers. Some were Bigfoot researchers or those who claimed to be Bigfoot researchers. And the show was filmed in July at several locations throughout the Pacific Northwest and different parts of the country. And the object of the show was for the first team to provide undeniable proof that Bigfoot exists would win a $10 million prize. And as the show were, as I said, filmed in the summer, July and August, here we are with 2 teams remaining. And if they had found a Bigfoot, you're right, they probably would have come out and said, we found a Bigfoot, and tune into the show to see how we did it, because their ratings would be through the roof.
Right.
And, from what I've been told, no one proved Bigfoots exist. So I think it's a little disappointing, but it's kind of like an elimination where each team has to provide proof every week, and if they don't or they provide the worst proof, they're eliminated, much like Survivor. And they're down to 2 teams out of the 9, and whoever is the last team there, I assume, get some kind of runner-up prize for being the last team. Justin Smeha and Rose Sahibi were one of the teams in this Bigfoot Bounty Show. Now, Rose Sahibi is a filmmaker, and he was the gentleman who filmed and directed the short film Shooting Bigfoot.
Okay.
Which is the story of Justin Smeha, who claims that in 2010, he and a hunting buddy were road hunting in the Sierra Mountains of Northern California, and they came into an open pasture, and they saw what they first thought was a bear standing on two legs with its arms raised up in the air, almost kind of like surrendering or saying, you know, don't shoot, that kind of posture.
Yeah.
And he stopped, the driver stopped the truck. Justin stepped out of the truck with rifle in hand, put the scope on this thing, and when he saw it, he even states it was a monster, it was out of place. I didn't know what it was. It could have been a guy in a costume, but it didn't look out of, it didn't look like anybody I've ever seen before, some kind of monster, so I just shot it. And he claims that the creature started to take off running. He shot it a second time, and it ran off into the brush, disappeared from sight. And he and his hunting partner got out and started to look around the area to see if they could find the body, because he claims he hit it twice. And they started searching the area for the body, and while they were searching, they encountered two small juvenile, almost childlike Bigfoot creatures. And one of them came towards him. He shot it in the throat, and he eventually choked it to death. And he claims he killed two Bigfoot, an adult and a juvenile Bigfoot. And going into panic mode and being afraid that, you know, somebody, he would get in trouble for doing this, shooting an unknown animal, they decided to bury this juvenile Bigfoot under brush and pine limbs and different branches and things like that and leave the area. Well, when he did that, he finally came out and told a story to a few people. A few researchers, well-known researchers like Bobo from Finding Bigfoot and a few others, went up to the area to try to recover the body. Well, they did recover a body, but as it turns out through DNA testing on three different tests that were done, the flesh that they brought back, the hair and flesh, was nothing more than a black bear. So there was no proof that he actually shot a little one or a big one. It's his story.
Right.
Now, the interesting twist to this was he did take a polygraph test passed the polygraph test with flying colors. So that's the only thing he has going in his favor, that he actually shot one. But I'm not a polygraph expert, so I can't say if they can be beaten or not. But I've heard from several people that if you believe something to be true, that you can pass one of those tests. So it remains to be seen.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of stuff about how to beat those tests, so I wouldn't even, if he's so far down the realm of faking a Bigfoot shooting a baby Bigfoot, then then I feel like he would prepare himself to, you know, even if he had to drink bleach to pass the lie detector test. But it's the whole thing doesn't add up for me, because I heard a long interview with him, and he said, part of the reasoning to shoot the baby Bigfoot was that so people would believe what happened.
Exactly.
And it's like, so your whole motivation for shooting the baby Bigfoot, then you do it, and now you don't, like, you don't want to prove that it happened? That doesn't make any sense to me. And then in the interview also, he was like, this is the worst thing I ever did in my life. I terribly regret it. And it's like, if it's the worst thing you ever did in your life, man, why are you doing a TV show? Why are you doing a movie about it? You know, if I did something horrible and regretted it for the rest of my life, I wouldn't be out there. And it certainly wasn't like a, hey, don't do this, folks, type of thing. It was, hey, here's my story. It was a terrible thing that I did, but let me tell you about it. So to me, it just doesn't even add up on a human nature level.
Well, that and the fact that after he said he deeply regretted it, he openly admitted he would do it again.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's his story is very peculiar. It really is. And I've seen no physical proof brought forth to say that he did do it. A lot of people say that, you know, he did shoot a Bigfoot, and they believe that he did. And maybe in his own mind he shot a Bigfoot, but there's been nothing physical brought forward to, you know, prove that he shot a Bigfoot. We basically have to take his word for it and a polygraph test. So that's really all we have.
And it's not much. It's weird. No. the shooting, Bigfoot shooting. I guess in conjunction with Bigfoot becoming hot, unfortunately, shooting Bigfoot is also hot, which is kind of unfortunate.
It is.
I guess we talked about the crappy part of what's going on in Bigfoot research. Where are we at on the actual good side? You know, where are we at on the legitimate researchers like you and other folks out there who are really trying to get to the bottom of this? I mean, it's a long-standing mystery. Where do we stand on trying to figure this all out?
Well, I think the best part of Bigfoot research right now is the technology has advanced so far that researchers, credible researchers, have the opportunity to get their hands on some good quality technology to help with the research. Back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, all you had a camera, and maybe if you were lucky, a VHS video camera to take with you in the woods. Now there's thermal FLIR, there's trap cameras, game cameras. There's a lot of good material out there for us to use that will help in the research. Plus, being in the public eye and being so hot, there's a great interest in it, which brings more eyewitnesses out into the public, especially to the researcher. They feel a little more comfortable because it's more accepted, and they're willing to come out and share their stories, where 10 years ago, a lot of people really didn't want to share a Bigfoot sighting when they had one. They'd keep it quiet for, you know, decades. And now, because it's okay that, you know, people are on TV doing it, a lot more people feel comfortable coming out and saying, I did see a Bigfoot, here's the sighting, here's the location, and researchers, credible researchers, are able to get out to those locations and look for viable evidence. Where we stand now, we stand the same place we did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. We don't have any definitive proof.
Yeah.
A lot of circumstantial anecdotal evidence continues to pile up, the footprints, the castings, eyewitness stories. We're probably around 3,000 to 4,000 eyewitness reports now, and more are coming out. So we're really no further ahead than we were back in the 60s and 70s. We really aren't.
Yeah, it's difficult. That was part of one of the questions I had here in the notes, or I guess one of the overarching sort of, as I teased when we were setting up the interview, when I posted on Facebook, one of the longstanding conundrums. It's like, what do we really actually know about the Bigfoot today, at the end of the day, that we didn't know 50 years ago? It's hard to really put your finger on much that we can say we actually know. It's still a huge mystery.
Exactly. And when I do my lectures, that's a question I get asked all the time. What do you know to prove this is legitimate? And I don't. I don't know that the information that I'm lecturing on is factual. I mean, it's all speculation. It's all assumption, because all we really have to go on are eyewitness testimony stories. I saw Bigfoot doing this. I saw Bigfoot eating that. No one has ever been able to study, no scientist that I know of has been able to study a Bigfoot in its natural habitat, watching them eat a deer, or fishing out of a pond and, you know, eating a fish, or, you know, eating berries off a tree. No one's ever seen that. So we don't know for a fact that Bigfoot does that. All we can do is take the word of an eyewitness. And that's really all we have at this point, along with the anecdotal evidence, the tracks. And those have been shown that they can easily be faked. So there's really not much that we have right now to prove that Bigfoot really exists.
It's a challenge. That's why at the beginning of the show I called it my nemesis. I've always been interested in Bigfoot. I find it so vexing that it's so difficult to get to the bottom of it. Now, I've sort of beaten the drum here on the show for statistical analysis in the world of UFOs. Has there been any sort of look at statistics with regard to Bigfoot? Because I feel like there's something involving migratory patterns that needs to be looked at, and maybe somebody has, but I feel like if we could unlock some kind of migratory pattern situation, we may be able to get a step ahead of the Bigfoot, but I presume possibly that someone's tried this.
There have been people who have looked at the migratory patterns. I myself have looked at some of the patterns based on reports here in Pennsylvania, and I've seen some small patterns, but not enough to stay one step ahead of the Bigfoot. If I knew, or you knew, or any researcher knew where Bigfoot was going to be in a certain time, we could be in that area to get that evidence and prove once and for all this thing's, you know, legit. But we don't know if it's a migratory animal or nomadic. We don't know if it hunts in groups for food. We don't know very much about the animal.
Right.
And unfortunately, because we don't know that, we don't know when it's going to show up or where it's going to show up. The sightings are so random. You do see some patterns show up in the sighting reports, but unfortunately it's not enough to really tell you when and where a creature is going to be at. I really believe that if these animals do exist, there's such a small number of them that it's hard to try to guess, you know, where they're going to be. You just don't know. It's like, as a researcher once told me, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack when the needle is constantly moving.
Yeah, it's almost like weather in a way, too. We're dealing with something that we don't quite understand how it happens. You know, it's almost if you were in the 1800s or whatever and you were dealing with hurricanes or something like that, you know. Now maybe they know when it's going to – now they do know when a hurricane's going to happen. But back then, no one could predict it, so you had to let it happen and try and figure out what caused it. It's almost like that in a way. We're dealing with something we don't quite have all the information on how it happens together right yet.
Right. And there's a lot of theories from a lot of researchers around the country and around the world that have looked into this, and they speculate Bigfoot is a missing link, or Bigfoot is an undiscovered primate, or a relic hominid, or Bigfoot is an ancient human being, or a tribe of Native Americans that decide to hide in the woods. There's so many different theories and so many different speculations about what Bigfoot is, where it comes from, its habits, and really, to be honest with you, Tim, no one really knows what Bigfoot is or what it does.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of theories about that, and what, you know, the big one that sort of is the sticky point in a lot of this is the paranormal Bigfoot, the interdimensional Bigfoot, you know, the non-flesh and blood part of it all. That really is. Makes it even stickier as you look at it further. And I know you I was reading your About Me, and you mentioned Stan Gordon as a mentor, and Stan Gordon has that amazing book on the Bigfoot UFO flap that happened in the 70s. But I in general, let's dive a little bit into the interdimensional paranormal theories. I mean, what do you think of all that?
I'm really not sure what to make of all that. I keep an open mind when I research Bigfoot and look into the phenomenon because, as I said, no one really knows. And I try to investigate all avenues possible. I don't subscribe to one theory or another. I used to. I used to think Bigfoot was nothing more than a Gigantopithecus blackie that simply migrated over from Russia along the Bering Straits, came down into Canada, North America, and we were dealing with a very sparse population of that. But as I continue on with this and I find more questions to answers, it really perplexes me. So I keep an open mind and I look into all possibilities. Being that Stan is a mentor and I've known him for about 30 years, I've actually investigated quite a number of cases in the last 10 or 15 years with Stan. And I'm very familiar with his research in the early 1970s up through today. And some of the cases that he's talked about and he's researched are really off the wall, very strange cases of high strangeness, very strange cases that involve Bigfoot's disappearing in a flash of light when shot at, or tracks that just simply stop. Like if you're following a set of tracks in the snow, they come to an end, and they don't go up in the trees. There's no trees around. They just end. He has a fascinating case that took place in Fayette County in late 1973, in October, where supposedly a UFO craft came down on a farm in a little community called Lysenring, Pennsylvania, and supposedly, the UFO was sighted by several of the residents. A state police officer was involved. He witnessed some strange phenomenon. Two Bigfoot-like creatures were seen in the same area as the supposed UFO was. And there are cases like this. They're not a high abundance of cases, but there are these strange cases that do get reported from time to time. So I keep an open mind, and I look into all these cases to see if there's any validity to it.
Yeah, because when you're dealing with this, when you throw the paranormal element of the UFOs into it, you just never know what's going on there. The UFOs could be as perplexed by the Bigfoot as we are, so they could be flying overhead and be like, "It's a Bigfoot!"
Right.
You know, and then they're like, "Turn the thing around, man, that's a Bigfoot!" So it could be like this super rare wildlife of Earth that they're thrilled to see, and then we're down here and we're like, "He came from the UFO!" And we don't know any better. So we're, you know, when you start mixing all this paranormal stuff together, it gets strange. The compelling part of the interdimensional theory that, like I said, always sort of sticks with me is sort of like I'll credit Nick Redfern for the argument, because he points out, you know, you get the British Bigfoot, and there isn't the ecosystem to support a Bigfoot in Britain, but they see Bigfoot sometimes, or they have,
right.
You know, they have a history of Bigfoot sightings. So it makes you wonder, and I've kind of said this about the paranormal in general, where if even if it comes from the mind and it's a projection of the mind, that doesn't make it any less awesome and amazing. So there's always the chance that somehow the Bigfoot is a projection of the mind, which would still make it really cool, or it's interdimensional and somehow it there's something got stuck here or something. Who knows?
Well, that's exactly it. You said it perfectly. Who knows? And I think it's all fascinating. I mean, I tend to lean towards it being a terrestrial creature that just hasn't been discovered yet. What kind of creature it is, I don't know. I don't know if it's more human than ape or more ape than human or animal. I just honestly don't know. But I think it's fascinating to look at all these possibilities because there are these cases, as I mentioned, and you brought up, that there's some of them out there that have these high strangest qualities about them. The disappearing Bigfoot or people hearing something walking through the woods and they're looking right where the sound is coming from and the woods is open enough that they can't see what's walking. But they can hear the crump, crump, crump as this thing's walking right by them. There's a lot of strange things that do happen in some of these reports. And my personal take on that is I think if you're going to research this subject, you've got to be open-minded. Whether you want to believe it or not, you have to look for what the truth is. And you have to go down that rabbit hole sometimes to find out if that's truly what the case is. It may not always be, and you may come up against a dead end, but you can't discount these cases. You can't just walk away from these cases and say, two or three these cases happen, but it doesn't mean anything. Somebody claimed they saw something, so you've got to check in to see if there's any validity to it.
Exactly. I was thinking about it, too. It's, you know, people say the dolphins are super smart, and they're almost as smart as people, and which must be very frustrating for dolphins, but then you don't know what. For all we know, the Bigfoot could be, like, just as smart as a dolphin. You know what I mean? It could be almost as smart as people. So who knows? Again, I go back to this who knows, because it's fun to speculate about with the Bigfoot. I hope it is more of a flesh-and-blood animal, because I can't deal with the interdimensional aspect of it all. I hope that they just find out that it is a bipedal hominid on the run out there.
Well, I hope so, too. I was asked a question at a conference I was lecturing at about 7 or 8 years ago. Somebody asked me, do you think Bigfoot's paranormal? And my answer was, I hope he's not, because if he is, I feel I'm just wasting my time.
Right.
Because I'm never going to be able to prove what this thing is.
Yeah.
Sure, it's fun to go look, and it's fun to investigate and talk to eyewitnesses and have that legend hunter's feel in the woods, you know, or that legend tripping experience. But that can only go on for so long. You know, you get tired of going round and round and round looking for answers and more questions pop up. It does get frustrating. But in the same sense, it's also perplexing. I want to know. I mean, I'm so tied up in this after so many years. I've got to know what the truth is. Whether or not I like the truth is a different story, but I got to know what it is.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head there with the, if it is paranormal, it's too way too frustrating to try and it's too perplexing to think that it could you might not be able to get it. So it's a mess. Now, what happened? I remember when I first got into this, when I first got back into this about 12 years ago or so, there was a lot of talk about this dermal ridges thing. It was sort of like, oh, this dermal ridges is a new breakthrough, but now it's been like, it was probably about 15 years since the dermal ridges thing really burst onto the scene. And obviously it wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back. So was the dermal ridges thing just a red herring in a sense?
I can't honestly answer that because the situation, I really haven't had the chance to see the tracks myself. And the situation, it's kind of an odd one. And what I mean by that is, Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum had several tracks in his possession. He probably has over 200 castings in his possession at his lab out in Idaho State. And a forensic specialist by the name of Jimmy Chilcutt happened to be watching a show on Bigfoot one day on TV and saw these prints. And he is probably one of the world's most leading experts on dermal ridges, whether they're human or non-human prints. And he's actually gone out and fingerprinted, or I should say ridge printed, the largest number of primates around the world. So he has a vast collection of primate prints as well as human prints. and he's very familiar with these. And he saw these ridges on the bottom of some of Dr. Meldrum's casts. So he went out to meet with Jeff and to examine these casts for himself to see if they were truly ridges. And he came up with the determination that they are truly some kind of dermal ridge. And even showed the patterns on the flow patterns on the castings were different from primates, and they were also different from humans, like a flow pattern all their own.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. Everybody's like, there it is. There's the definitive proof. And he even admitted on several documentaries, I have no doubt there's some kind of bipedal hominid out there running around, because there's your proof. You can't fake dermal ridges. Well, a few researchers started getting involved. One of them by the name of Matt Crowley, I believe, started getting involved with this whole dermal ridge situation and wanted to find out if, in fact, that these ridges could be duplicated. And what he found out was that, yes, they can be. And he found out by pouring molds and continually doing it that occasionally, sometimes plaster or the molding material, whatever it be, can make artifacts and leave little raised ridges in the cast, which closely resemble the dermal ridges.
Mm.
So he was quick to point that out, and there was a lot of debate and argument back and forth that the ridges are legitimate. No, they're not, because they can be replicated. So it kind of died down after a couple of years of back and forth debate, and it lost its whole luster, if you will.
Yeah. Well, there's not much you can really do with it, because even though people were excited about it, and I was even excited about it, like I said, when I first kind of heard about it, but then it's like, well, I guess at best case scenario, what could you really use it for other than to, what, substantiate a cast after the fact? I mean, that's not going to help us really, you know, pin this thing down.
Right. It's going to show, and this is hypothetical, if those were truly ridges or scarring on, you know, left on the track that was picked up by the casting material, whether it be plaster or whatever, all it's going to show is that there is something out there that needs to be investigated. It's not going to tell us what Bigfoot is. It's not going to tell us, you know, its habits or anything like that. It's not going to provide undeniable proof to science that this thing is real. It's just that something is out there leaving these prints, and it's going to probably raise more questions than answers. And that's what it did for a little while, but it kind of, like I said, it kind of lost its luster.
Yeah, yeah. There's not much you can really do with it. It'll be interesting to see if it ever pans out, if they ever get the Bigfoot and they check his feet. And they're like, oh, that dermal ridges thing was true. So,
right.
Now what the dermal ridges has given way to the other big D, and that's DNA. And that's the other big thing that people are really going crazy about, especially in the last year. Of course, they had the difficult, let's put it that way, Melba Ketchum story that, much like the Rick Dyer story, went everywhere. I just hope when they eventually do get the Bigfoot, it gets the press it deserves, because the people who keep saying they were getting close and nailing it, they get all over the news. But what do you make of the whole Melba Ketchum thing? And then we'll couple that in with the professor there in England. The name escapes me off the top of my head, but he did a lot of great work this past fall, came out on the TV and stuff with the Yeti and everything. But it seems like the focus now is on DNA. I guess let's start from there. The focus is on DNA. Where do you stand on the use of DNA in this whole mystery?
Well, I think DNA can prove that Bigfoot is real or not. It can be proven that there is no other animal that can be classified. And they're getting to the point now where they can tell what the female species was or the male species was. And I think DNA is going to prove Bigfoot exists. I don't think we need a body. That's just my opinion. But the Melba Ketchum thing, I think, started out with good intentions, and it kind of became like a train wreck.
Mm.
It jumped the track and just became a giant cluster. And a lot of samples were collected from all over the country. I believe there was 109 total samples that were submitted to her, whether it be saliva, hair, blood, tissue, you know, different samples by some credible researchers. And I think that it's all intents and purposes started out on the up and up, on the, you know, the positive, honest level. I think money became involved and attention became involved, and unfortunately the whole study kind of went south pretty quick.
Yeah.
It became quite evident that it wasn't going to get peer-reviewed by a reputable scientific journal or a scientific department of a university. So Melba and her associates ended up purchasing the DeNova journal, which they claim was a legitimate scientific journal, but nothing had ever been published in it. And, yeah, they published their findings in this journal, and they never would release the actual evidence that they had to other scientists to look through this to be able to verify what they had, what their claims were. They never uploaded anything to the GenBank. So a lot of researchers who read the study and looked at the information that she did release felt it wasn't what she claimed it was. And she actually claimed that it was a new species of creature that was female, a human, interbreeding with an unknown male, whatever the species was. And that's about as far as she could, you know, come up with a conclusion. And this dated back, a species dated back 15,000 years. So her findings and her study that was released to the public made a lot of media news and a lot of headlines, but it kind of never went anywhere. It jumped the track, and that was pretty much the end of it. When other reputable scientists were coming forward and saying, no, your samples were porcupine and badger and beaver and horse and cow, and you know,
yeah,
it just kind of fell apart pretty quickly.
Now, yeah, yeah. The doctor, just to jump in. So thanks to Digger Dog in the chat. He name checked the doctor for me. That's Dr. Sykes in England, who's been doing that great work on the DNA stuff.
Yeah, Dr. Brian Sykes is from Oxford University, and he became interested in the phenomenon, and he began doing a study very similar to Melba Ketchum's. Now, he didn't have as many samples as Melba did in her study, but a lot of the samples that he got were from, again, credible researchers, and I know Dr. Jeff Meldrum submitted some samples to him, and he did look at several different creatures, the Yeti, of course, and the North American Bigfoot, and he determined, what I found interesting is, based on two of the samples that he had, he determined that what he believed could be the Yeti was nothing more than an extinct polar bear. And that's fascinating in itself.
Right.
Now, what people don't know is there's three descriptions of Yetis that have claimed to be seen over in Nepal. In the Himalayas, I mean, there's one that fits the description of a giant bear. So if that's the case, then, you know, his findings are spot on the money. Unfortunately, the North American Bigfoot, a lot of his samples and things that were released on the TV program, the Bigfoot Files, were discounted as common animals, bear, canine, elk, moose. So it kind of shot that down, but it was good to know that, you know, these samples can be ruled out. Now, he has not released his full findings yet through his paper. We're waiting to see when that does come out, what his full findings are. But the TV show that was on the Bigfoot Files talked mainly about the North American Bigfoot and I believe the Russian Bigfoot. I believe her name was Zana.
Yeah, Zana, yeah.
Zana, the supposed female Bigfoot hybrid or whatever she was that was captured and made a slave. I believe the findings on that was that she actually was a descendant from North Africa.
Yeah.
So really his findings didn't prove Bigfoot existed, but some interesting information still came out of his study nonetheless. So again, we're still waiting to see what his full final report is. I think his study was far, far more credible than Melba's study was. And I think it got a lot more positive feedback from the Bigfoot research community.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, I talked about this on my year-end show. It was another one of these situations where the media kind of missed the story. You know, they were like, oh, the Yeti's a bear.
Right.
And it's like, but yeah, but he's saying the Yeti, the sample they got was from a million-year-old extinct bear. That's amazing. What? You're missing the whole point, media. That frustrated me in a way, because cryptozoology, as Lauren Coleman likes to point out, is not just the study of unknown creatures, but out of place creatures. So a million year old bear in the Himalayas is pretty amazing.
Right. Oh, yeah. I was excited when I heard that. I was very excited when I heard that. And I was asked on a radio interview what my thoughts were. And I'm like, it didn't prove the abominable snowman exists that we think it is, but it still proved that there's some kind of extinct animal. And cryptozoology is the study of unknown or hidden animals, animals thought to be extinct. So if there's an ancient polar bear running around that was thought to have died out 40, 50,000 years ago, man, that's big news. And why isn't that being covered?
Because it's more, it's more, you know, it's more exciting for them to say that, to dismiss the Yeti. It's unfortunate, but, well, it's puzzling. I have this in the notes here. It's puzzling that there's all these Bigfoot creatures all over the world, but we still haven't pinned one down yet. That's the both the frustrating and fascinating part of it. It would be one thing if it was sort of this one isolated, let's say, pocket of northwestern United States, but we're talking about Yowies and Yetis and Yerens and creatures all over the world that seem to resemble the Bigfoot, yet we still haven't nailed them down. It's pretty, like I said, it's both fascinating and frustrating.
Oh, exactly. And that's, I think that's a main reason why a lot of the folks who subscribe to the paranormal theory kind of, they use that as an argument. We've never found a body. We don't have bones. We never captured a live one. So they must be paranormal. They're almost like they're trying to solve a mystery by using another mystery.
Right.
You know, and it is fascinating that we haven't found a carcass. And it's also very frustrating, as you mentioned. But in a way, I can kind of see why we haven't found the remains yet. If we look at fossilized remains that are being discovered, it's not a creature that died 500 years ago or 100 years ago. These are creatures that died millions of years ago, hundreds of thousands of years ago. And it takes a long time for bones to fossilize. People, unfortunately, don't realize that. It has to be the right conditions, the right type of soil, the right kind of pressure, the right kind of environmental conditions for bones to fossilize. I've known this for a while, being that I'm a hunter. When an animal dies in the forest, usually within 7 to 14 days, that animal is completely decomposed.
Yeah.
I'm sure there will be some bones left, but you have small predators that come around, like porcupines and mice, field mice that come around that like the calcium, and they like chewing on those bones, and they scatter them.
Mm.
So a full carcass to find in the forest would be pretty difficult. Being a hunter, I've never found the remains of a dead bear that has died of natural causes in the forest. I found some deer bones, of course, you know, from time to time, but I don't find it every time I go out. There's a population here in Pennsylvania of literally millions of deer, and we know deer die every day, natural causes, being shot, you know. So we should be tripping over deer bones every time we go out in the forest, and we're not. So I can kind of understand why we're not finding a body, especially when the species that we're looking for has such a low population, a low number of creatures out there. If there were millions like there are deer, I'm sure we would have found more than one body by now.
Yeah, how many do you think there are, a ballpark? I wouldn't even be able to venture a guess, because if you asked me how many antelope there are, I wouldn't be able to tell you that. But how many do you think we're dealing with Bigfoot here?
I honestly don't know, and
yeah,
I really
a hard question even.
I couldn't answer that because, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know if these animals really exist or not. I've done so much research that I still have questions to this day, and I can't definitively say these things are real.
Wow.
So I don't know if Bigfoot exists. I've never seen one. I've had some strange experiences in the forest that I can't relate to common wildlife, but I can't say they were Bigfoot. I know there are credible people that are claiming they're seeing Bigfoot, and there's some pretty interesting anecdotal evidence, but can I say 100% Bigfoot's real? No. But in the same sense, we don't know how many of these animals are out there. We don't know if there's 5,000 or if there's 100.
Right.
You know, we don't have the ability to study these animals in the natural habitat. Now, from all the claims that we get, especially as of recent, you would think there's literally thousands and thousands and thousands of these Bigfoot everywhere, because everybody's seeing them these days.
Yeah. It stands to reason there must be a small pool of them. I'm going to stick to the flesh and blood aspect of it. Otherwise, we could be, you know, we could have a population of a million Bigfoot, but they just exist in the other dimension. They just come into Earth for some various reason. But that's, again, that's like you said, it's trying to answer an unknown with another unknown.
They're here for the pizza.
Exactly. Well, I said to somebody a while ago, since we keep finding Bigfoot scat all the time, maybe our dimension is just their bathroom.
That's a good possibility. we just don't know much about these animals. As much as I'd like to admit that I know everything there is to know, I don't. As I said earlier, we discussed, we're basing a lot of this information off of eyewitness testimony, what people are telling us they're seeing, what people are telling us, you know, what they're hearing out there in the forest, the tracks that we find, and even some scientists who are looking into this, they're making guesses based on what evidence, little evidence they're finding. So I have no doubt people are seeing something out there. What it is at this point, I just don't know.
Now, I remember doing a show about the Yowie a while ago, and a couple of things stood out to me, and one was connected with the overall Bigfoot mythos, and that was the Bigfoot smell, that sort of sulfury smell that you hear about a lot. So before I jump into the second thing that stood out, let's talk about that. I mean, what do you make of that whole thing? It's kind of weird.
It is kind of perplexing, and again, going by what the eyewitnesses tell us, there are cases where they do encounter this very foul odor, whether it be a musky type of scent, rotten eggs or sulfur smell or decaying flesh. Even there have been reports of smelling really strong fecal matter. And it unfortunately, it's not associated with every single case. So it leaves us questioning and wondering, why is it only certain cases have this reported smell? Is it something that, like a defense mechanism, that they encounter a human and they want to have us leave, or like a skunk would do?
Right.
Or is it because they're a hair-covered creature that's out in the forest that may not bathe?
Right, I was just thinking that as I was kind of saying that. Yeah, I mean, if you're covered in all that hair and everything, and yeah, it makes sense.
Getting sweaty and smelly, yeah. I mean, we just don't know. But I know that from my studying the cases over the years, not every case has an associated smell with it.
Okay.
There was once a great American named George Henderson. He met a woodland ape, or Sasquatch, and despite its dangerous message of environmentalism, became his friend. But when the time came to do the hard thing and send it back into the forest where it belonged, and birds could perch on its shoulder because it was gentle, George Henderson summoned the strength, and by God, he did it. Did it hurt? You bet it hurt. Like a bastard. But he did it because it was the right thing to do.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Is that Harry and the Hendersons?
You've seen it.
This is my life, Jack.